Saram, dear listeners, and with pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, we begin this episode of Vahini Satsang. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and along with me, as always, is Sai Prakash. We also have Brother Sai Giridhar from the Sri Satya Sai Center for Human Values joining us for this session of Vahini Satsang. We are in Chapter 20 of Prema Vahini. If you are referring to the Telugu book, it is Chapter 7 in Bhagwan's own original writing. And today, this segment, this chapter, we have divided into two segments. But actually, the line of thought that Bhagwan is mentioning to us in this is quite connected in both these segments. In fact, we broke it only for the sake of its length. But I guess since both the segments are just an extension of what Swami is telling in each of them, maybe I will play now both the segments and then we will pray to Bhagwan to guide our thoughts.
శివుడు ఎట్లు సర్వాంతర్యామియో, యముడును అట్లే సర్వాంతర్యామిగా ఉండును. యముడు దేహసహితుడు, అతడు జీవుని బాధించలేడు. శివుడు జీవసహితుడు, అయితే అతను దేహమును ఎంతకాలమైనను నిలుపబోడు. జీవి నిజతత్వమును తెలుసుకుని వలనన్న దేహమే మూలాధారము కనుక దేహాధికారి అయిన యముని దృష్టికి ఏ నిమిషము గురియగునో, ఏ నిమిషము మృత్యుపాశం యొక్క వలలో తగులుకొనునో ఈ దేహము. ఇట్టి క్షుద్రమైన దేహమును ధరించిన జీవుడు పై జాగ్రత్తను ఎరింగి ఏ నిమిషము కాని శివునితో చేర ఆతురత కలిగి ఉండవలెను. ఆలసించినా అర నిమిషమును కూడా వెనుకకు త్రిప్పలేరు. నేటిది రేపు, నిన్నటిది నేడు అని కొన్ని కొన్ని కార్యములు నిలుపుకొందురు. అయితే సాధన కార్యములు మాత్రము అట్టివి కావు. వానికి నిన్న, రేపు అనునవి లేవు, ఎప్పటికప్పుడే. గడిచిన నిమిషము నీది కాదు, రాబో నిమిషము నీది కాదు. ఈ మెలకువ అనగా జాగ్రత్త హృదయమునందు ఉంచుకొనినా జీవియే శివుని చేరును. ఈ జాగ్రత్తను హృదయమందు చేర్చక కేవలము దేహమే ప్రధానమని ఎంచి రేపు మాపను తలంపుతో లౌకిక వాంఛలకు పునాదులు వేసుకునిచుండినా ఆ జీవియే దేహ సంబంధమైన జన్మలు ఎత్తుచు యమదర్శనమునే చేయుచుండును. సాధకునకు శివదర్శనము తన హక్కుగాని యమదర్శనమును తానేనాటికీ ఆశించరాదు, ఆలోచించరాదు. ఈ దేహ జీవ సంబంధమైన వాడే మానవుడు అనబడును. అట్టి తత్వము ఎరిగిన మానవుడు సాధనలో ఏమాత్రమూ ఆలస్యము చేయరాదు.
యమ ఇస్ యాజ్ ఆమ్నిప్రెసెంట్ యాజ్ శివ. Yama is associated with the deha or the body. He cannot affect the jivi or the individual soul. Shiva is associated with jivi, but he will not allow the body to subsist for any length of time. The body is the essential vehicle for the jivi to understand its real nature. Still, who knows when it will become the target for the attention of Yama, the master of the deha? Who knows when this body will get entrapped in the coils of Yama's ropes? The jivi housed in such a puny and perishable body must grasp the above-mentioned caution and be ever eager to merge in Shiva. No single moment that has passed by can be turned back. People procrastinate certain things, doing today's tomorrow and yesterday's today. But the tasks of sadhana are not of such a nature. For them, there is no yesterday and no tomorrow. This very moment is the moment. The minute that has elapsed is beyond your grasp. So too, the minute that is approaching is not yours. The jivi who has engraved this understanding on their heart alone can merge in Shiva. Without assimilating this truth in the heart, the jivi, based on the assumption that the body is important, is immersed in the aims of today and tomorrow. It thus lays the foundations for worldly attachment, and so it is born again and again with body and continues to have the darshan of Yama. It is the right of the sadhaka to have Shiva darshan and not Yama darshan. He should not wish for it, nor even think about it. Only those who have this relationship of the Deha and the Jiva are human beings. And those who have realized this principle should not slacken even to the slightest extent in their sadhana.
So this was segment one. Let me now play for you the next segment two.
ఇప్పటి దినములలో మానవుడు అనిత్యమైన లౌకిక సుఖములను చూచుకొనుచు అనుభవించుచు సంతృప్తి చెందుచున్నాడు. మానవునకు విశ్రాంతియే లేదు. రాత్రి నిద్రతో, పగలు తిండి తీర్థములతో పెరిగి పెరిగి ముసలితనమున మృత్యువు వెంటాడుచుండు సమయమున ఎటుపోవుటకు ఏమి చేయుటకు తోచక సర్వేంద్రియ బలములు సన్నగిల్లి సాయము చేయునవి ఏవియునూ లేక మృత్యువుకు భృత్యుడగుతున్నాడు. అమూల్యమైన వజ్రములాంటి విలువైన మానవ జన్మను వెలలేని జన్మగా చెల్లని కాసుగా చేసుకొనుట ఎంత శోచనీయము. భగవత్ చింతన సాక్షాత్కార సాధన చేయక కాలమును వృధాపరచి తర్వాత పశ్చాత్తాపడిన ప్రయోజనం ఉండదు. ఇల్లు కాలుచుండగా బావిని త్రవ్వ ప్రారంభించినా త్రవ్వుట ఎన్నటికీ, నీరువచ్చుట ఏనాటికి? ఇంకా ఇల్లు నార్పుట జరుగుపనియా? ఇది కాని పని. ముందుగానే బావి సిద్ధముగా నుండినా అట్టి అవాంతర సమయమున ఎంతో సాయపడును. అంత్య సమయమున భగవచ్చింతన చేయ ప్రారంభించినా బావిని త్రవ మొదలడినట్లే ఉండును. కాన నేటి నుండియే భగవచ్చింతనకు ఎప్పటికప్పుడు సిద్ధము చేయుచుండినా ఏ నిమిషమున అంత్యము ఆసన్నమగునో అప్పటికి ఆదరణగా నిలుచును. రేపు చేయవలసిన సాధన నేడే, నేడు చేయవలసిన సాధన ఇప్పుడే ప్రారంభించవలెను. ఏ క్షణమున ఏమి జరుగునది తెలియదు. కనుక చేయవలసిన సాధన చేయుటకు వెనుదీయరాదు. ఈ సాధనకు దేహదార్ఢ్యము కూడా ప్రధానము. ఈ దేహమునకు పోషణ అవసరము. అతిపోషణ కూడా హానికరమే. ఎంతవరకు అవసరమో అంత జాగ్రత్తగా చూసుకునవలెను.
These days, man is content with visualizing and experiencing evanescent worldly joys. He has no rest, spending the nights in sleep and the days in eating and drinking. He grows and grows until his old age. When death pursues him, he cannot decide where to go or what to do. All his senses have weakened and there is no one to rescue him. So he ends up as an easy prey to the jaws of death. How sad it is that this human life, precious as an invaluable diamond that can never be prized, has been cheapened to the status of a worn-out, worthless coin. There is no use repenting after wasting your time without meditating on God or practicing any sadhana to realize Him. What is the use in digging a well when the house has caught fire? When will you dig it? When will water come? And when will the fire be extinguished? It is an impossible task. If at the very start there was a well ready, how helpful it will be on such critical occasions. Beginning to contemplate on God during the last moments is like beginning to dig the well after the fire has broken out. So, if from now on one equips himself with frequent contemplation of the Lord, it will stand him in good stead when the end approaches. Start today the sadhana that has to be done tomorrow. Start now the sadhana that has to be done today. One does not know what is in store next moment. Therefore, there should be no delay in engaging oneself in the sadhana that has to be done. Physical stamina is also necessary for the sadhana, and so the body has to be tended. At the same time, overtending causes damage. Therefore, to the degree that is essential, it should be looked after with great care.
So that is the entire chapter 20. And of course, when you hear what Bhagwan has mentioned here, one thought that comes to mind, one imagery, is of the divine photographer. Swami used to say that you should always be ready.
Absolutely.
You don't know when the divine photographer will click, and you want you want it to be a good, nice smile.
Right.
It should not be that you are, that is not a selfie. You can't take it. God is going to take that photo, and if you are ready, then probably it will be a nice photo with God. So I think that is one thought. And in fact, when I was thinking about this, I felt that, Swami is so beautifully trained when you are living with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so many times it has happened, isn't it? Where, you go to Bhagwan and you say, Swami, we are preparing for this program. Swami said, ah, ready? You do it now. Now you are surprised. Really, you want it now? Swami, no problem. Half an hour, you do it now. Okay. I remember it once happened with the Burakata boys. They had just prepared and they thought they will start this process of asking Swami. even as they are preparing, you don't know when Swami will agree. Swami said, no, Swami, actually the dresses are in the hostel, Swami, and harmonium is not there. It's okay, no problem. You go. You do it now. At that point in time, fortunately for them, they thought, okay, they said yes, but very difficult to say yes at that point in time. You are not ready, actually, But you need to really have that faith that, if he's asking me to do it, he will give me the strength. Whatever happens, he takes the responsibility. If he's saying no, you do it now. But, they were able to live up to it also by Swami's grace. Definitely it is his grace. But, it just occurred to me that how living with Bhagwan, we really learned, you cannot postpone. If you postpone God in your life gets postponed.
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, Swami is talking about death, and he's talking about how it is so uncertain, and how there is this beautiful story in I think Bhagavatam of Ajamila. So that is something which is pertinent here, because he was a good Brahmin, and he is very respectful to his parents, and then he was very the parents were very happy, and he was having a very good name. And he got married and he had children and he had a son, I think. So life was going on in the normal way. So one day he went to the garden and he was plucking flowers for worship and all that. And then he saw that one of the lower caste members, the man, like a Shudra, he was moving very freely with one lady.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very, sensual. And he could not control himself.
Mm-hmm.
And his life took a complete turn.
Mm-hmm.
And he invited that lady to be, like a housemaid in his house.
Mm-hmm.
And he started giving her more importance than his wife. And he started shouting at his wife. And then he started, then he left his family.
Oh my God.
He left his family, he left his wife, he left his parents, he left everybody and went and got married to this lady. And he had children with her, he had 10 children with her. And the last son, he named Narayana.
Mm.
And so he was leading, his entire life had changed. And he was completely, leading a life of desires and complete sensual gratification, and he was completely lost in that worldly life. And suddenly, towards the end, when he was about to leave his body, he loved his youngest son so much that he said, "Hey, Narayana, Narayana, Narayana," he was calling him.
Mm.
And at that time, he left his, that was his last breath.
Mm.
And now the messengers of Yama, Yama Kinkars, were waiting there to he said, this is a juicy fruit. Let us take him and put him in the lowest of hells. But as they were waiting there to catch him, the angels from Vaikuntha came. They said, he has uttered the name of Narayana.
Oh, we have right over it.
We have to take this soul to heaven.
Heaven.
Although he was calling his son Narayana, not Lord Narayana.
Oh my God.
But the very utterance of the name Narayana at that moment, they said, earned him that heaven. And there are a lot of philosophical arguments about this. But the only thing that stays is, like what Swami is saying, if you want to suddenly become a saint in the last moment, it's not possible unless you build to it. He had that punya which he had done for
definitely, there is, there is much more to the story. It doesn't happen that way, that you know, you'll be so lucky that luck only favors the brave.
Yeah, I mean, and just like Lord Krishna says in the 8th chapter, 5th shloka in the Bhagavad Gita, he says that those who are able to think of me in the last moment, then that will be their last birth. That will be their last birth.
In fact, this is an interesting story that raises a lot of debate. The story of Ajamila, like, you know, it seems quite contrary to what, in fact, Bhagavan is saying here. Swami has in fact mentioned here that you shouldn't start building the well after the house is on fire to draw water and, you know, save the house. But rather you should have built the well,
much,
you know, equipped with water and everything. So that if the house is set on fire, eventually you have the means to, you know, put the fire off. Basically meaning that there has to be, as Brother Bishu just now pointed out, a sustained effort and a regular effort and an early effort.
Yes.
That is very important, and Swami emphasizes on that.
Yes.
That you shouldn't wait till the very end and say, okay, this is my post-retirement plan.
Yes.
Because of a simple reason, that nobody actually knows when death would strike them or when they will have.
Will you actually live up to being getting retired?
Yeah,
will you actually live up to that age?
Swami, very, very beautifully he uses the word Shiva Darshana and Yama Darshana. Like to have the Darshan, the vision of Yama, the god of death, or to have the Darshan vision of Shiva, the ultimate supreme being. So nobody actually knows when they will have the Darshan. In fact, there's a very interesting story that comes to my mind, which was a question was posed to a Himalayan master. And the questioner, of course, was very much like the, like many of the modern day, you know, you have these people who have a flair to ask the question, what is the purpose of my life? It's not what is the purpose of the life, it's about what is the purpose of my life, right?
Okay.
So, and they basically are kind of groping into what spirituality is at that, you know, at a very beginning stage. So there is a funny thing that happened. So one such person had approached a Himalayan master in the Himalayas and asked him this question, what is the purpose of life?
Okay.
Their basic tendency or the attitude behind was to ask, what am I doing in this world? Like, what am I supposed to do? What is my purpose, right? So that master, you know, he just paused for a moment and he said, the goal, the destination of your life is the graveyard. So the questioner was shocked. He said, what? The graveyard? I thought, you know, you would say to become a great engineer or to become the greatest doctor.
Very grave statement.
It's a very grave statement. So, but then he clarified and he said, see, moment the body is born, the time starts ticking. Nobody can stop that clock. That is the only real destiny of the body. Since you asked the question with Dehabhimana, or with identification with the body, I also replied in the same parlance and said that the destination of the body which you think you are is the graveyard. That is the sure shot destination. Whether you get to any other place or not, 100% you are going to get there, right? So it's very funny in a sense, because in Mahabharata there is a mention of the Yaksha Prashna, where Yudhishthira, who had to save his brothers from the waters that were poisoned during their forest exile, he had to answer a set of questions posed by a demigod, a Yaksha.
Yes.
And the Yaksha asks him this question, you know, what is the most mysterious thing in this creation, in this world? And Yudhishthira very wisely, of course, says, all of us see death around us day in and day out. Hundreds and thousands die around. Even after witnessing death with our own eyes of people around us, we still walk away feeling that we are immortal and eternal in this physical body. And that is the most mysterious thing in this world.
Absolutely. You know?
And Swami, in fact, is highlighting this again and again in this chapter. If you look at the second paragraph which Swami has spoken, or rather written here in Prema Vahini, there are 6 points. Each part of the sentence is actually one point, completely loaded, you know. And there are 6 points that are there in this entire chapter, which we can have a look at and deal with. Before we get into this, I just want to clarify, you know, because this question definitely will be lingering with many of the listeners. How come this Ajamila got? Very nicely, Brother Bishu put it that we don't know the entire story because we don't know what punya karmas he has done over many births, and maybe he was, you know, just clearing away certain of his desires, which had to go, he had to go through. And I'm sure, though his life was that way, it wouldn't have been a comfortable life, because he would have had to face a lot of abuse from the society, because it's not a life that is encouraged by the society, clearly. So he would have had to face it. It's an adharmic way of life. So many challenges he would have faced anyway. But having said that, we don't know the story entirely.
And with bhoga, always roga also comes.
Roga also comes. Disease follows, you know, over-consumption through any senses. But most importantly, a perspective that I always encourage myself to hold regarding the Puranic stories are, many of the stories, they don't present all the details, but just one fine aspect to highlight a particular point. Like Brother Sai Prakash mentioned, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, the essence of it, if I am to say, is antamati so gati. That is, whatever is the final state of mind, that will be what remains after the body has yamadarshana. That is, after the body leaves its, means the prana leaves the body and the body dies. Whatever is the final, absolute final, which means the absolute milli nano femtosecond moment before the prana leaves, the pancha pranas leave the physical body entirely, whatever is the state of mind, that state of mind is established as the state of being of that person. So, if that is why, you know, all our elders always say, you know, all the time,
keep chanting.
Keep chanting. Even when we sneeze. See, sometimes earlier there have been instances where somebody has sneezed and they've just collapsed. So, even when they sneeze, you will hear people in India shouting Krishna, Rama, Govinda and stuff like that.
Yes.
So, the reason is, there is a very strong belief that if you constantly, you know, ruminate on the name of the Lord in every activity, in everything that you do, even at the time of death, the only thought that will come to your mind is that of God. And if God occupies the mind at the end, at the absolute final moment, then that will be your state, that is mergence in that very divinity, or sayujyam, as Swami says, is the most important step there. So this story of Ajamila actually indicates this particular point.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And now if we can go to those six highlights of this chapter.
Okay.
Right? So the first highlight of this chapter is Yama is associated with Deha or the body, which body, I briefly described through the story of this master and the disciple, where the disciple asks, what is the purpose of life? And the master says, to go to the grave. You know. So Yama is associated with the body.
That is very clear.
That is very clear. The second point is, Shiva is associated with the Jivi. Right?
Yes.
That is
the Jivatma.
Who is the Jivatma, or the, who is the indweller of this body, who will continue to, if you don't do the necessary stuff as Swami describes here, you will continue the cycle of birth and death. You will keep changing body like change of dress. Swami would often say that it's referred in Bible as death is a change of dress. So this change of dress will continue to happen to you, who is the indweller of the body, or the Dehi, who is the Jivatma. So Shiva is intricately connected to the Jivatma, and there is a secret there. Each of these statements are highly loaded, and there's so much that we can, you know, actually bring out from this. The third statement which Swami says is, though Shiva is associated with this Jivi, he will not allow the body to subsist for any length of time. Means the body always comes with an expiry date. There is so in fact, if you look at all the Puranic stories, this particular fact has been highlighted very, very strongly. All the demons or the asuras, you name them, Ravana, you know, Kumbhakarna, or you know, Hiranyaksha, Bhasmasura, you name the demon. The only desire or the only prayer they had, that they should be invincible and immortal.
Amar.
Amar. With the body, physical body. Right? And they have always been told by Brahma that that is not possible.
Not possible.
Okay. So as an alternate, they would come with their own intelligent method to say, if that is not possible, grant me a boon like this, like this. Thinking that it's impossible that death can occur to the physical body through those means. For example, Hiranyakashipu says, it should neither be day nor night. You know, it should not be on earth or in the sky. It should not be by an animal or by a human being.
It should not by a sword or...
It should not be by a weapon, or any other instrument. And like this, he goes on and on and on, you know, almost trying to jack Brahma, who is the creator, to say that it's impossible now. Let me see how you are going to kill me. Right? So, the thing about the creation is, nothing is impossible in this creation. There's always
And if you think that you can never outsmart God, you're dumb.
That's totally true. It's always like that, right? And then you know what happened. Lord Narayana took the form of of Narasimha avatar, who was part lion.
And similar is the story of Tripurasura also.
Tripurasura. Where they said that, you know, only when all three are aligned.
All the three cities should be aligned, and that alignment also will happen only one millisecond or whatever, and once in God knows millions of years.
But the point here is, what these Puranas and the stories from the Puranas are trying to tell us is, from Swami's own definition of a Danava or a demon, demon is one who is highly identified with the body and mind, forgetting the Atma. Completely. And in fact, Swami mentions that here, where he says that if somebody has forgotten the Shiva Tattva that is associated with the Jivi, and based on the assumption that the body is important, and is immersed in the aims of today's and tomorrow's, like, you know, going on trying to solve the problems of today's and tomorrow alone, of course we have to solve the problems of today. But if that is the only purpose of your life, or the only activity of your life, then what happens is the fundamental question remains unanswered. In fact, this is a beautiful way in which Swami used to convey this to students. In the mandir, we used to sit for, you know, a few hours for, during Swami's darshan, and Swami would come out of the interview and beautifully walk towards the students and stand in front of us and sway like that, and he would start speaking to us, especially in the years 2001 and 2. Swami would speak at length, right, for
these informal sessions outside, after the interview.
So one such session, there was this teacher's block on the Ganesh portico, opposite to the to where doctors used to sit earlier.
Correct.
And behind the teachers, you know, some of our students were initially allowed to sit.
Yes, I know.
For, you know, for some time.
Hmm.
So on one such day, I was seated there, and Swami came near the teachers and then said, he looked at all the boys and said, "Hey, boys, andri itlu kuchuntaremi?" You know, he made his index finger slightly bent at possibly around 45 degrees angle and then said, "All your backs are like this, bent."
Mm.
He said, "Inta vayasulone itla unte pedda ayin tarvata itla aipothundi kada."
He
said, "If it, at this young age," actually the secret of what Swami has revealed in this chapter is there in this simple analogy.
Mm.
He said, "At this young age, if your back is going to be bent like this, as you grow old, is it not going to bend further?" And he would make a shape with his hand, and the shape would be of that of question mark.
You
know, nature teaches us that.
Correct.
As the body grows very, very old, if the spine is not strong enough, the body arches.
Yes.
And the whole body, if you carefully watch a person who's very, very old.
Yes.
And physically weak.
Yes.
The shape of the person, it is made by nature herself. Because Mother Nature is giving us this lesson to say that there is a question unanswered in your life. While you have put all your effort and got all the way up to this age, answering many questions and solving many problems in your life. But there is still one question unanswered in your life. What are you doing here? For what reason was this body given? In fact, that is the next point which Swami gives here, where he says, the body is the essential vehicle for the jivi to understand its real nature. So that is why the body is given. And if that effort has not begun, if the well has not been dug right from an early stage, then this question remains. And nature shows it. In fact, it is so sakshat, as we say in Hindi or Sanskrit terms. Sakshat means it's so
so evident, apparent, so apparent.
Evident. Right, and it's staring in front of our eyes. And the truth is right there, where nature is showing us. See, take an old tree, for example.
Yes.
The old tree also humps, and then you see that it forms the shape of a question mark. So in fact, Prashnopanishad deals with this and says, have you answered the fundamental question of life? Even while you had this sojourn between birth and death. Because everybody is going to have a birth and it will have a death. There is no escaping. Even the avatars had shown this by their own personal example.
Absolutely.
That the physical body will be born at some point and it will have to leave at some point. Because it is made of the five elements. But what you do between the birth and death is what is of paramount importance.
Absolutely.
So, this question mark is what is Swami referring to here, in a sense, along this chapter, where he says that if you don't utilize this chance to kind of awaken, in the Telugu reading of this particular paragraph, it is so clear and succinct, where Swami says, "Jagrita" is the word that he has used. If you are not awake to this truth, this fact, the jivi will continue to solve daily problems day in and day out, and it will be endlessly stuck in the cycle of birth and death, and Yama Darshana is guaranteed. Every time you are born, you have to have the darshan of Yama at the end. So that is guaranteed, but Shiva Darshana is not guaranteed. So the purpose why the we are all here in this body is to have Shiva Darshana. So that was the fourth point which Swami made. The body is the essential vehicle for the jivi to understand its real nature. The fifth point, which is very important and creates a sense of urgency, is who knows when it will become the target for the attention of Yama, the master of Deha. Who knows when this body will get entrapped in the coils of Yama's rope, as Bhagwan beautifully points out here. And finally, the sixth point is beginning to contemplate on God during the last moments is like beginning to dig the well, as we discussed, after the fire has broken out. Right? And the seventh point he says is, while I say that the body is temporary, it is necessary for you to maintain it. Not over maintain it, just about maintain it well.
Yes.
So because it is a vehicle that allows you to understand your own true nature.
Let the vehicle not become the goal.
Yeah, the vehicle should not become the goal, but the goal is to understand your true nature.
Yes.
So these are the seven, I think, superfluous, amazing points which Swami has kind of highlighted here, because if we are not awake to these seven points, possibly we will miss the bus in this birth. And that is why Swami has highlighted this and made it very clear that we should make use of our precious life, precious human birth that we have been gifted.
One point, maybe slightly tangential to what you're saying, is the same thing, the way you lead your life. Swami, in one of, in that Sadhana, the Inward Path, a compilation of quotes from Swami's discourses, there's a very beautiful quote. He says, don't think that if you're leading a married life, if you're a grihastha, that you are not eligible for realization. So people, they think, oh, we have to be detached, we have to this thing. Even in this book, Sri Satyasai Anandadai, very beautifully Swami tells the author, Kannamma Swami says, you finish your responsibilities, lead a dharmic life, finish your responsibilities, and after that you take completely to the spiritual path. Even doing your duty is part of the spiritual path. But here in this quote, Swami says, look at your wife and children as sacred and, you know, serve them. That is one approach as long as you are in the family life. He says, when you reach the age of 50, prepare for a life of celibacy. He says, all the five senses have to be mastered at the age of 50. Then at the age of 60, all the six foes, kama, krodha, lobha, should be controlled. At the age of 70, he says, be ready to merge with the seven sages, seven colors, seven seas. That means you are far above the mundane desires. And then at 80, he says, you should be one with the Lord of the eight directions. Then 90, he said, you should be one with the realm of the nine planets. your level of realization should be such that you are at par with the nine planets. And then he says, when you have reached 100, you should have mastered all the 10 senses. And that is a complete life. It's a very beautiful, he says that at the age of 100, you should become wisdom incarnate. That's what he says. And then at that point, there should be no traces of action and consequences. Therefore, there is no desire for it. So that is the...
At the age of 50 also, to have controlled desire, you know, you cannot wake up at the age of 50 and say that, you know, now from now I will control desire.
Absolutely.
I think this is something, it needs 50 years of effort, 30, 40 years of effort to actually reach there. And I think that is the reason why Swami is so insistent on Balvikas. And that is the reason, I was just talking to Mr. Ramesh Kasturi, Professor Kasturi, sir's grandson. And he belongs to the first Veda Pathshala students, first batch of Veda Pathshala students. 21 of them Swami personally picked. And they were very lucky in the sense that Swami did their Upanayanam and Swami personally gave a mantra actually to all of them. And chanted the Gayatri Mantra and all that. And Swami was so insistent in all of them leading that kind of a life which was completely away from all the attractions of the modern world. You know, just like it was in the Gurukula. I mean, that is how for 12 years they were only studying the Vedas. Only learning Sanskrit and studying the Vedas. And Swami was so happy with them. Swami wrote 14 dramas, right from Markandeya to Sakubai to Radha Bhakti, and he took them to Mumbai. And you know, why I remember this is, this starting these process early in life is so very important. Because, you know, I think as we get older, we will realize that if you have not started something, some of these things early, it's very difficult to actually, because the mind is so powerful. I mean, in the Gita, Lord Krishna says, among the senses, I am the mind. So it is really so, so challenging if you have not taken that effort to start this process early in life, isn't it, Giridhar?
No, if you want to highlight this point further, Swami gives this amazing, mind-boggling story of a sage by name Jada Bharata. You know,
yes,
King Bharata,
yes, yes.
Who after finishing his responsibility,
right.
He took sannyas and he went to the... This is an unbelievable story because we are talking now about starting early,
yes,
and somewhere getting there of
yes.
knowing yourself,
yes.
maybe at the end of the sojourn, hopefully,
yes.
like that, right? And then hoping that it will sustain. How important it is to have a sustained effort, and here Swami very specifically mentions a line, which again I would like to highlight. I am doing this because I feel, in my humble opinion, this chapter has, if we pay careful attention to this chapter every day in our life of this Prema Vahini chapter, it has potential to a certain awakening within us,
yes.
which can lead to our redemption. Because if we are not awake to the points that are there in this chapter, potentially we may miss the bus. That is the issue.
Correct.
So Swami's another sentence here is, and those who have realized this principle that there is a Deha and there is a Jiva and there is a Shiva that is the ultimate which has to be realized. Swami says those who have realized the principle, that is the principle of Shiva, should not slacken even to the slightest extent in their sadhana.
Correct.
It is very, very important. And to highlight this, Swami gives the story of Jada Bharata. King Bharata, who eventually became a sage, he did tremendous penance, great penance, and at the end of it, he had the realization of the self.
Mm-hmm.
Means he had the realization of the self, but he was not established in it. Because he still had a physical body, and he was working through the physical body, but he knew very clearly that there is a Deha, and there is a Jiva Bhava, which is an illusion, and actually Shiva is the truth. He had an experiential understanding of that. Right, so he was also respected at that time as a gyani at that point of time, but he still had a body, and this his experience or this realization had not become in Sanskrit terms paripakva, that is it had not matured completely,
yes,
but he had definitely had that the knowledge of that. So what happens is, in his hermitage he sees that there was a mother deer that was running from a hunter, and the hunter shoots an arrow, and as the arrow strikes the mother deer, she delivers the baby, and the baby is now left without a mother. So much compassion swelled in his heart, so he went and picked up that calf, the deer calf, and then brought it to the ashram, and he would tend to that calf, to the deer every day, and give milk and everything. And as the years, flew by, the deer grew up, and it almost behaved like as if it was sage Bharata's own son or something like that, right? So he also developed that kind of attachment towards the deer, though he was a gyani, right? So at that point, what happens? He realizes that Yama Darshana for the body is going to happen. That is, being a person of wisdom,
yes.
he is able to sense that the body is going to die now. He is not going to die, that the body is going to die. He is able to sense. But what happens is, in the final moment when the breath was leaving his body, he just gets one thought. And the thought is, what will happen to this deer? Right? The last thought was deer. And hence, immediately, because he had no karmic balance left because of his jnana, and he was immediately transmuted into a deer's body. Very next moment, he was born in the womb of a deer, and he was born as a deer. And because of his spiritual wisdom as a sage Bharata, even as a deer, he remembered who he was. Because otherwise the animals don't have the prajna or the awareness of, of their self. But here he had that awareness of who he is and what had happened to him. So he would always remain away from, the rest of the deers and the regular processes of ahara, nidra, bhaya, mahituneshu, that is food, fear, and, the procreation process. That deer would always step away from that, and it would always move around near the ashrams of the rishis where yajnas and yagas would happen. Swami describes this like this. And eventually the deer dies, so he gets back a human birth, surely by the qualification of being a jnani. and he has no account balance in terms of karma. But in that birth, because he remembered the mistake he did earlier, he does not involve himself in anything. When he is asked to do something, he will do, including eating, which is a mandatory process for the body. If somebody tells him eat, he will eat. Otherwise, he would not eat. He would be in, he would just be in himself, and he would be meditating on himself. So one day, a king's palanquin was passing by, and the king felt that it was not going fast enough. And he asks those soldiers who are carrying his palanquin why they are so slack and, you know, inefficient that day. And they say that one of the soldiers last minute had to be dropped out because he was unwell. And that is why there are fewer people lifting this palanquin. So the king just looks out, and under the tree, this boy, young man by name Bharata, is seated. Yes. So he sends word for him and says, ask him to lift the palanquin. So Bharata comes and lifts. By this time, he has already earned a prefix to his name, which was called Jada. Jada means inert. Because he would hardly do anything on his own, you know, no excitement in life, nothing. So the king asks him to lift the palanquin, and he does. But there is still slackness, and the coordination was even worse. So the king wonders what is wrong, and he asks them to put the palanquin down. He gets down, calls all the soldiers, and, you know, admonishes them, and they all say, oh Lord, it is because of this new guy who has come. His height is not matching, so that is why we have this problem and all. So the king is little upset. He says, can't you not hold up to their height properly? Can you not do your work properly? What is wrong with you? Answer me. And there is no reply from Jarabharatha. So this happens 2-3 times, and the king is enraged, and he says, do you know who I am? I'll cut your head away if you don't, you know, reply to me. So still there is no response. And then very casually, sweetly, Jadabharata says, whom are you addressing, O king? Are you addressing me, who has no body or mind? Or are you addressing the body that has got no awareness and consciousness of itself? Whom are you addressing, he says. So that is when the king realizes that this is a Paramajnani who is there, the great Jnani, and he is not an ordinary, and he falls at his feet and seeks him to be, make him his disciple, you know. So this story Swami narrates, can you imagine a master who had already jnana?
Yes.
Who was living in the forest in his hermitage, not even in the city.
Yes.
Right? Because of one attachment in the last movement towards the deer, that, as Swami very nicely says, you should not slacken even to the slightest extent in your sadhana. That is how important this is.
Absolutely.
So, in this context, there's one more very interesting story to highlight this point of Antamati Sogati. It seems there was a very great yogi in one of the Indian villages, and it's a village folklore. And it so happened that that yogi, whatever he uttered would come true. So, the villagers would gather, they will tell the problems, and he will just utter few words, and that will be like a Veda Vakya. Because that master was a very highly evolved master, a realized master. So he would, whatever he says, had the power of truth and all that. So he would say something, it will come true. One day the master declared that tomorrow this body is going to leave. Again, see, they very clearly distinguish, Swami, as he mentions here, the Deha Bhava, Jiva Bhava, and Shiva Tattva. They clearly distinguish this, right? For such people, this is, these stories are being said about. So we should understand what is our plight, you know, and where we should start. So this yogi, he says, tomorrow the body is going to be left. And hence, I will be seated here. The body will be seated here in meditation. You all can come and assemble. When the body is left behind, the bells in the temple nearby will start ringing. This is the announcement that the yogi made. So this word spread across villages, and from 100 villages nearby, you know, all the villagers assemble into that place, and they are all there eagerly waiting to see this extraordinary moment when the master decides to leave or shed the mortal coil. So there the yogi is seated in Padmasana, and, you know, he takes a few breaths, and then he leaves the body, and nothing happens. So this is a great shock to everybody, because in their own life they experience that whatever the yogi said would happen in their life.
Mm.
How is it possible that this time, when the final word of his, yes, which was when he leaves the body, that the temple bells will start ringing, did not happen.
Mm.
So this yogi had a disciple who was not there at that moment, and he was approaching that place quickly because he heard this announcement himself. And he arrived. So people asked him. He himself was a great person of accomplishment, spiritual accomplishment. So they asked him, what is this? How can it happen that Guruji has told and it has not happened? So that disciple sat in dhyana, and through his wisdom eye, he saw what happened. And he just looks towards a mango tree.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a mango fruit. So he says, can you bring that fruit for me?
Mm-hmm.
So they bring the fruit. So he asks for a clean and, you know, very, very neatly cleaned and washed knife. So they bring that. So he takes the fruit, he gives the knife to one of the villagers and says, cut the fruit here. And they cut the fruit exactly at that place, and the temple bells start ringing.
Oh.
So everybody is shocked and stunned, what is this that has happened? So then the disciple explains that the great master who had left all the desires in his life, in the absolute final moment when the prana was coming out, his eyes was open and it was fixed on the mango that was there on the tree, a full ripe mango, and a thought flashed, just a single thought flashed in his mind, how nice is this mango? And immediately he left the body at that time. Antamati sogati. Whatever is the state of your mind finally, that's what drives you for towards your life hereafter. So he was born instantly as a worm inside the mango, and when the mango was cut, the worm was, you know, cut into two as well, and that ended the life of the worm, but of course it tasted the mango in the meanwhile, and the that yogi was completely liberated after tasting the mango. Okay, so now, these stories and laws have been there to highlight this, that the effort is just not enough. So at least start, if not, you know, be consistent, and as Swami says, don't slacken.
I think, and we have that famous story that Bhagwan says how a person smartly thought he will name all his children as Rama, Krishna, Govinda, so that, you know, he will anyway he's going to think about them. But, you know, finally he says, oh, all of you have come, who look out of my shop, and he dies.
Exactly.
So I think, so this is definitely not something that can happen, you know, by chance, by luck. It won't happen by providence. You have to put that persistent, consistent effort, and I think that is something that is so much emphasized here. And I think anyone who's on the spiritual path probably also will know with time that, you know, if for worldly accomplishments we need X amount of, you know, hard work and, you know, sincerity and whatever, persistent and intelligence, whatever, you know, for spiritual attainments you actually need much more. Because, you know, here you are happily using the mind to create something, but there you are actually taming the mind. So that is actually something even more, far more difficult to accomplish, and that is the reason why it has to be started much earlier,
at a young age.
At a young age, and
I think that's why Swami would often say, start early,
yes,
drive slowly,
yes,
reach safely.
Absolutely. In fact, no, even if you look at all our lives, you know, in a manner of sorts, okay, you know, all these words of Bhagwan fell into our ears when we were very small, you know. Sai Prakash has been studying from primary school days. I don't know how many discourses he has heard. You know, I was in the Balvika. So, but you know, even though we have heard so much, supposed to have started early, but even then, you know, even now we are still, you still feel that, oh my God, we are not even, we're just still trying to discover what Swami has told, and, you know, let alone trying to, you know, practice anything to perfection.
In fact, I think this is the most, I would say, sublime aspect of what Swami is saying here, that he not only pointed out these awakenings, if I can put it that way, in our life, or affirmations. No, they're not really affirmations, but they're awakenings. If we can go through these points every day,
yes,
they will awaken us to this truth, because this is exactly how life works.
Yes.
But not only that, but he has also given us what is the sadhana that needs to be done, where Swami tells here that no single movement that has passed by can be turned back.
Yes.
People procrastinate certain things, doing today's tomorrow and yesterday's today.
Mm.
But the tasks of sadhana are not of such nature.
Such nature, yes.
For them, there is no yesterday and no tomorrow.
Yes.
This very moment is the moment.
Yes.
You know? I mean, and he's very clear to say that the sadhana is to live in the present.
It's not like, okay, from next month onwards, if I have a thought, next month onwards, I will control this particular desire of mine.
Right.
No, next month start now. Start from the next moment, because you don't know what is going to happen in the next 30 days, whether you're even going to get the chance. In fact, no, I remember this very real life thing that happened with Bhagwan. There was this person who is a neurosurgeon, and you know, he actually did neurosurgery after he had specialized in another discipline, with the idea that he will serve in Swami's hospital. He thought, you know, neurosurgery department is there in Whitefield Hospital, and you generally don't have many accomplished neurosurgeons. It's one of the specialties where not many doctors go into. And he thought once he becomes a neurosurgeon, and so he thought he will practice for, he is from abroad, from the West, so he thought he will practice, and the last 5 years of Swami's earthly sojourn, he thought he will come and settle down and serve, you know. So all his life, he had prepared, and he was, you know, whatever, sorting out his life, thinking that the last 5 years, I will do God's work. And even as all that was happening, you know, Swami just left. And so that's why I always, and you know, he feels so bad that, you know, instead of spending all that, he should have come and served at that point itself. That's why I feel if you postpone God in your life, then, you know, your life gets postponed. Mm. And I think that is something that Bhagwan has very clearly emphasized here. Mm.
And, you know, as you said, Swami very clearly mentions here that the sadhana that you have to engrave in your heart, the jivi has to, the individual being has to engrave in the heart, is to understand that there is no past and there is no future. It's very logical, because if you see the concept here that we are dealing with is antamati sogati, that is, whatever is the final state of mind at the time when the life force leaves the body, that is the state of the being, right? Now, what happens here is, Swami is telling the sadhana that you can practice here is to know every moment in your life that the past is history and the future is mystery. In the sense that what has gone past has gone past. You don't have that moment with you.
Correct.
What is going to come is not there with you.
Yes.
Both these moments are only plays in your mind. So they are here to divert your mind towards something that is not present now and here. So practice concentration or ekagrata, one-pointedness of mind, where it stays only in the present moment.
Hmm.
This is a very key practice, because the present is always untouched by the past or future in that sense.
Hmm.
Because the past is gone and the future is yet to come. Hmm. All that you have is the present moment. If you consistently learn to be in the present moment, you will potentially realize that you always are in the present moment only. For example, Swami says that each one of us have five aspects to us. They are called Asti, Bhati, Priya, Rupa, Nama. In Sandeha Nivarani, Swami explains very beautifully these five aspects. The first three, Asti, Bhati, Priya. Asti means just being. Presence, isness. Bhati is illumination, that is the knowledge of the knower, of this presence. And then Priya. Priya means to be a mumuksha, or to be somebody in thirst, deep, intense yearning and thirst to know oneself. That is Priya. So Swami says Asti Bhati Priya is the aspect of the Atma, Rupa Nama is of the body. So the Rupa Nama will anyway go with Yama, because he has the control over it. So every physical body that is born will die. But Asti Bhati Priya will not go anywhere. The most fundamental in Asti Bhati Priya is Asti. Asti means isness, being, present, in the moment. So that presence is omnipresence.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a single presence. It's omnipresence means other than that presence, actually there is nothing.
Nothing. Yes.
That is all pervasive presence.
Yes.
So if we even start realizing in our day-to-day life, like say when we focus on one work, we are so 100% into that, that we don't allow thoughts of the past and future to influence or distract us. And we are focused, that is karma yoga. So when we are doing our, say, bhajans, or we are focusing our mind on Bhagwan and expressing our bhava, if we keep that undistracted and in the absolute present, it becomes bhakti yoga. And if we are able to witness that in all the states, I am but only presence, it is jnana yoga. I am just the witness. So all the three yogas are made absolute and available if we are able to know that the past is past and the future has not yet come, and the presence alone exists.
Yes.
So even in the final moment, what would happen is, when the prana is leaving, no memory will influence you, neither will any speculation influence you.
Yes.
So what remains is your presence.
Yes.
And that asti, which is divinity itself, will remain, and that is the state of a jivan mukta, or the one who has come out of the cycle of birth and death, which is the purpose of human.
Absolutely. Fantastic. In fact, so the present is the biggest present.
Yes, it's the greatest gift.
The greatest gift that we have. And our presence in the present is what is a present that we can give to the present.
Yes. So many presents there, but that is the best present that we can give ourselves.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So thank you so much, Brother Giridhar. I think it was lovely recounting all the stories from the Puranas. And trying to understand what Bhagwan has mentioned. In fact, I always feel that, you know, Swami's life is itself enough. whenever you want to explain anything to do with whatever is written in the scriptures or the Vahinis, and when we have Bhagwan's life to see and to learn from, as Swami said, my life is my message, and there is so much that we will feel inspired about to lead this life of prema, lead this life that Bhagwan has mentioned in Prema Vahini. So dear listeners, please open the chapters of Prema Vahini if you have the book. And there is vahini.org. That is a very beautiful site which has the soft copy of all the Vahinis. And in Telugu, Prema Vahini, this is chapter 7 what we are discussing. So let us spend more time in ensuring that our present really becomes that beautiful present that we can give to the Lord every second of our lives. Thank you so much. Saram.